Guys, welcome back to Serial at Midnight. My name is Heath Holland, and I'm so excited because I am joined by Jason and Sean Mendelson to talk about the soundtrack of our lives, about Vince Guaraldi and the Music of Peanuts. Guys, welcome back.
Thank you for having us, Heath. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
We had a great conversation. For people that are just joining, that are just watching this video and haven't seen our conversation about the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving soundtrack, that's a good place to start. But there's a lot has happened in the, that was just like 5 months ago as I'm recording this, that conversation happened, but there's been a lot of things that have happened since then. So there's a new soundtrack out for It Was a Short Summer, Charlie Brown, right? So just let's start there. It was a Record Store Day thing. Go for it.
Our first foray as a label was to release the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving for its 50th anniversary. And so then we decided, well, the 55th anniversary of It's a Short Summer has come out is this year. And so we planned and did release through Record Store Day an exclusive green 45 RPM 12-inch soundtrack album for the first time ever for that title. So we were thrilled to have it come out. We'd never done this before. We'd never done a Record Store Day event before. And we enjoyed both preparing it for them, releasing it with them. And also Sean got to go to his first Record Store Day, which was a very unique experience, to say the least.
Yeah, I live in the South Bay, San Jose area, Bay Area, and I went to Rasputin the morning of Record Store Day, and it was exciting because I got to go in there and say, what's this all about? And I learned a lot from the employees about how it works, how it operates, the excitement in the air. Just in the last, I'd say, 6 months, my brother and I have learned a lot about not only vinyl in general and how it's produced and manufactured and how to do that the best way possible for the fans, but also learning about how Record Store Day operates and how we can be a part of it in the future.
And it was such a great feeling because, again, we made these albums to celebrate Vince Guaraldi's great music. Most of this album in particular, none of this music's ever been released as a phono record before or in any way apart from the show. And to get that out to the fans was our primary goal, but there's a lot of fans. There's fans of vinyl, there's fans of Vince Guaraldi, there's fans of Peanuts. And I think the great thing is that they ran out very quickly of the 1,200 that were made for the Record Store Day here in the States. I think they're all gone now. So unfortunately, we didn't get it to everybody as quickly as we would have hoped. But I think that as an initial foray into that cultural event, it was very eye-opening and very gratifying.
Yeah. I was telling you guys before we hit record that I tried to get it in my record store and it was like, oof. I mean, people started camping out the day before, the night before records, not even the night before. They started lining up at like noon the day before. So it's become it's intimidating, honestly, because there's some of the things that like 1200 is, it's low, right? But it's also like, there's some that are like, there's 300 copies all over the world. Good luck, you know? And so it's just like this chase thing. So
there is something exciting, obviously, for the fans to feel that they've earned it. You know, they go in and they earned it. And it is unfortunate when it's not available at a store or they sell the first two out in the first 10 seconds, which you heard from a couple of different folks. But I actually have to go back to the store to find out if they sold any at my local store specifically. But what was really interesting when you talk about the event of it all is it's such a cross section. I saw teenagers there. I saw older people there and everybody in between. And so I think it's, as you know, it's become bigger and bigger over the past few years, especially post-COVID. And we're just happy to be riding the wave with everybody else.
Well, and the thing also is we've appreciated the fans getting the vinyl. We've put a lot of effort into making it a really neat package. We've got the art from the show. We've got great liner notes by Derek Bang, who did the biography of Vince Guaraldi, and Sean did some. I think I did a little note in there too.
From both of you guys, there's great liner notes.
So I think there's a great little, it's a nice little artifact that we're really proud of. And so we're excited that people got it. And I think part of the excitement is we can now, I think, officially say that because it was so successful, we plan to release it in an exclusive or a limited release on July 5th of both a CD, which I have, it's up behind me here. There's a CD here. Sean's got the CD, which is similarly constituted to the record, but has all the tracks, including the bonus tracks, and also another 45 RPM vinyl. And then this is a Record Store Day indie exclusive, will be a blue, we're calling it a summer night blue vinyl. So if you didn't get the green, the Camp Green version, there will be this blue one in addition to a regular black one, and it'll be available digitally. And again, that'll be July 5th. And this is the first time we're talking about it, so we're so happy to talk about it. The pre-order should be available when you're watching this, I hope. But the goal will be that anybody that wants to get it can get it in all the different ways you can.
And you mentioned things. You mentioned digital, right? And streaming as well.
Yeah, that'll all be available July 5th. So we think the show came out. It's one of those things that's funny. One of the history about the show, it was a short summer, Charlie Brown. In 1969, when they made the show, and our father was the producer on it, there were a lot of things going on. They were making their first feature film called A Boy Named Charlie Brown. They were doing documentaries. My father had three other network shows that year. And when Short Summer was about to be made, they didn't finish it in time. It was supposed to be called It Is a Short Summer, Charlie Brown, and come out at the beginning of the summer. And what ended up happening was they didn't finish it. They had to push it. And they put in this flashback sequence. So it's now after the summer. And they made it. It was a short summer. And they did the music late as well, because Guaraldi had been working on the soundtrack for the feature film, which he was eventually nominated for an Oscar for.
But against the Beatles, which I
against the Beatles, which another irony.
Behind your head,
I see my Beatles.
And on Record Store Day, the Beatles had a new release, and we had a Vince Guaraldi release. So we're still 55 years later, competing head to head with the Beatles.
Nice, very cool.
There you go. And so, but the irony for us is it's similar here, where it's like one thing will come out at the beginning of the summer, and one thing will come out in the middle of the summer, and hopefully, it'll satisfy everybody. We're incredibly proud of the soundtrack. All of the songs are amazing. It's a huge, big, big brass sound. It was the last soundtrack from the 60s that they did. It is, a lot of the cues are very short, but there's a song, Love Will Come, that is a bossa nova feel, that is, you in the TV show, it's buried under the dialogue and the effects. And on the record, you hear it for the first time. And I think it's become one of our favorite tracks of all of them. And there's so many other fun ones. And we think what's cool is the show, which you can, of course, watch on Apple TV anytime you want if you're a subscriber, is fantastic. But the soundtrack is also fantastic and tells a story even without the rest of the show. And so that, along with the bonus tracks, which is part of what makes it so fun for us, every one of these albums from Thanksgiving to Short Summer to the future ones we do, you're going to hear these bonus tracks that are either alternative takes that didn't make the show, or literally things that should have been in the show and never were. We don't know why, including some compositions that have never been heard. On this one, it's all alternative takes and other little things where they're working together on the project. But it is amazing. And for us, who's lived with this our whole lives and known this music intimately forever, finding these things that we'd never heard, that literally have probably never been played on a machine or heard since they were recorded and not used on the special 55 to 60 years ago, is a real treat. And we hope that's the same for everybody that gets to hear these and listen to these things.
It's incredible music. And it's the same conversation we had for Thanksgiving, where it's like hearing it for the first time, because it's balanced so differently. You know, I listened to the new album, and then I watched the special, and I was like, where's the music? Cause it's so far down. And then when you listen to the album, now the record, it's just like, right, that's so alive, and it's so evocative of the times. I like the vibes. You guys are like this xylophone is what I think about, but you know, the all over this. It's got such a classic late 60s sound. Listen, I'm a Pebble Beach man myself. Like
that's one of our favorite tunes, and we always talk to David Benoit, who Jason and I consider the torchbearer of continuing Guaraldi's music, and he plays a lot of shows that are Guaraldi based. But Victor Feldman, who you're talking about as the percussionist on this, plays the vibraphone. It harkens back to the 50s when Vince Guaraldi first started. He was with Cal Jader, and Cal Jader was famous for playing, you know, xylophone, vibraphone. And this is the only album of the Peanuts specials that features that percussive sound in such a fun way. Mm-hmm. And this particular album, what I think is exciting about it is that brightness that comes from that timbre, that quality of that sound. The tempos of these songs are all upbeat, except for that Love Will Come, which Jason mentioned, which is a nice down-tempo, lovely ballad type song. It's the longest one. It's our favorite one, probably. The drumming on it, if you listen to Air Music and Masked Marvel, it's Jack Sperling plays the drum. It's just super fast. It's insanely fast jazz drum patterns on the snare. And I think that this was an opportunity, like Jason said, when they were making A Boy Named Charlie Brown, to create a really focused, bright, big sound. And I don't think Peanuts gets any bigger than this from a recording perspective. As far as the amount of members, there's 9 or 10 guys on here, I think. And also, I think there's an intensity to it. There's an intensity and a fun, maybe intensity isn't the right word. There's a fun aspect to it that stands in.
Well, and part of it for the special is the kids go to summer camp and it's the boys' camp versus the girls' camp. And of course, the girls' camp is dominant in everything, but there's a freneticness to that and a freedom to that where it isn't holiday based. It wasn't Christmas. It wasn't Halloween. But I think they'd all gotten to the point where they were really confident in how they could make these cartoons and these specials. And even for Garaldi, a lot of the songs are compositions, like Pebble Beach is one of my favorites. And he did that on, there's a whole other story for another time, but the original thing my father and Charles Schulz and Vince Garaldi worked on was a documentary called A Boy Named Charlie Brown, which is not the feature film called A Boy Named Charlie Brown, but that's where Pebble Beach was originated and written for that documentary. And this is now 6 years later. And even there's an alternative take we've got as a bonus track, which will be on all these different versions. And it is like, it's a more upbeat, it's a more frenetic, it's summer, let's go play feel. And I always think on the special too, whenever we did a clip show or we talk about the history of Peanuts, one of the main things we go to, which you just obviously have seen when you watched it, is the wrist wrestling at the end of the special between Lucy and Snoopy. And so that was where Vince decided to use Linus and Lucy again. And it's both the most, it's one of the most energetic animated scenes that Bill Melendez ever did, but it's also, Garaldi had a lot of fun just going to town on that Linus and Lucy in that context for that battle scene that they have, which is as close to the battle scene as they get in Peanuts.
And it's just that B section, ba-da-bum, ba-da, you know, so back and forth, it's fun. It's trading blows as they trade their, you know, wrist.
But I do think tied to Thanksgiving was in the 70s, it's a holiday show, they're hitting a purpose with all the music and they had the brass in there, which is great. But this one, which is from four years earlier.
It's the last mono. So, and I would say what's distinctive is this is the end of an era as the 60s come to a close and overdubbing. He becomes very much interested in multiple keyboards. As you remember from the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, there's 3 and 4 keyboards. And they're playing. So in essence, they're playing himself on top of himself on top of himself. Whereas this is a large band playing together and creating that live, you know, percussive brash sound.
And that's the most fun thing for, at least for me, and I think Sean agrees, is you have all this music from these 10 years, where 11 years, where Garaldi did the scores for the Charlie Brown specials. And they're all very different and idiosyncratic in every way, but they're also all so similar, whether it's the same composition that he's repurposing, or it's just the idea of this is not just underscoring, these are characters. This is his giving his interpretation of the life of these iconic characters, whether it's Charlie Brown or Snoopy or Peppermint Patty or Linus or Lucy. And that's part of what I think makes it so fun to go through all of these different ones. So
what I love about the Peppermint Patty theme is one of my favorites. And I love how it's different depending on what the project is. And it sounds totally different in this one too. It's got like that more, it's hard to even describe, but everyone is so unique and they're kind of in a different,
I appreciate you bringing Peppermint Patty up. That's one of Jason's favorite songs, and he was the voice of Peppermint Patty in the 80s. He was, when he was younger, he was the voice of Peppermint Patty. But that song, that cue was used more than even Linus and Lucy in the 70s and on every show. And so when you talk about that, it's treated differently in every show. And sometimes it could be just the B section, or it's an instrumentation thing, or it's just a solo over the chords that are referencing it, or it's just an overall vibe. You know, he changed even when he performed these songs live. He would perform Linus and Lucy 4 different ways in the same set. You know, a Latin version, a straight ahead version, a ballady version, and you hear that pop up on these cues over the course of the specials.
And what's fun, I think, too, and I'm probably extrapolating too much from this, but when Charles Schulz, when they made Charlie Brown Christmas in 1965, Peanuts had already been around for 15 years. It was already the biggest comic strip and the biggest thing in the newspapers from 1950, for October 2nd, 1950. When they did Christmas, it was the first time on TV and it was a big deal for all of them. But by the time they were rolling with the specials, Charles Schulz had introduced Peppermint Patty, later Marcy and Franklin, and Woodstock, who did not exist at the beginning of the TV specials run. But I think that those became the characters that were the most fun to use because they were the newest by the end of the 60s and the early 70s. And so I think the music also reflected that, because Pam Patty is this latchkey kid who does whatever she wants and is very confident, except when she isn't. Like, they all the Peanuts characters, when they aren't, they aren't. But she is very confident most of the time. And I think that lent itself to the theme that he then used, like Sean said, more than almost any other theme throughout the rest of their run on those. But but I'm biased because I got to voice Pam Patty. So I've always liked that song the most because my character, she's my favorite character. So, but I, again, have bias because I started playing when I was 9 years old. So that's the way it goes for me.
These tracks came from, we talked about this in the first interview, our first conversation. Let me hit it just for people so they're not completely in the dark. This was like a pandemic discovery. You were looking for something and you found this mountain of audio tracks.
Yes.
This could continue, right? It sounds like there's more that could be to come.
I can't imagine why not. They've been incredibly well received. We love making them. In the fall, we plan another release for the fall, which will be another soundtrack album. And I don't see why we can't keep doing that, because they're lovely pieces of both musical history that have never been heard, but also just another, like you were talking about, they're a stamp on their time. They're from their era, but I think they're timeless. I think it sounds just as good today as it did back then. And it isn't just, oh, this is 1969. It's also, this is where jazz was going, right? As it's trying to stay relevant with rock and roll.
And on that note,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of bittersweet, because the last piece of music that Guaraldi ever played before his sudden passing, it in the middle of a gig, a two-set gig in Menlo Park, which is just 10 miles from where we are right now, he was playing Eleanor Rigby. And he did multiple covers, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles. And 1969, obviously, was sort of the end of rock and roll era. But at the same time, the Beatles now are inspiring garage rock. And so what's funny is Herb Ellis, who's a very famous jazz guitar player who plays on Short Summer, 2 years later, the next special, Play It Again, Charlie Brown, he's playing garage rock, and they're trying to use a wah pedal, all these jazz guys. And it's great because these are really trained professional musicians who know how to hear music, but they're trying to figure out how to play rock. And it's in the show, it's Charlie Brown and Snoopy and the gang playing music, and they're faking it till they make it. And it works out for some reason. And so, yeah, it's the end of an era, but at the same time, Guaraldi embraced pop music where other jazz artists didn't. It served him well in the last 5-6 years of his life. He died in 1976, I believe. Because he leaned into it. He'd make jazz covers of pop music, and he accepted where the music was going.
And also one of the most fun things about listening to these, and you asked the question about finding the material. We've been looking for a way to have the best source whenever we do like a remastering of the shows. And we always went back to the source for the show, which was the final edited master for the special. And that was fantastic. But when there were certain things we heard that we didn't like in previous things that had come out, and so we went on a quest to make a better version of one of those albums.
Like that one back there.
Maybe that one. But it's still, we did that. And so, but in looking for that one, we found these other ones, and it was revelatory, not just because we had a better source and a better starting point, but also because in some cases we would hear Bill Melendez in the room or our father in the room, and we hear Vince, when he didn't get something right, the jokes he would make. And we got to hear, because he passed before we were even alive, but it's been such a huge part of our family our whole life. It was great to hear Vince Guaraldi and his sidemen sort of, in some cases, put the songs together. They literally would fix them in the session. And then that became the song that he would then play and be in all the shows. And to hear that, which we weren't even looking for, was a revelation. It was a great thing.
And just one more quick thing, Heath, on that note is, this man, Guaraldi, would have continued his career. You know, if he lived another 30, 40 years, he would have made more and more jazz. He would have, I'm almost certain, because my dad had kept his professional relationship with Charles Schulz and Bill Melendez all the way until everybody passed on. But what we have here is these things that people can now find and explore and hear. And it's almost like bringing him back to life in some kind of strange way, if that makes sense. Because we're able to find more music that, you know, it might not have been what he wanted to release in the late 70s or as his career went on, but it's an opportunity to serve him as stewards for his music, as Jason uses that word for what we're doing here. And so it's such an honor to be able to be a part of the process of getting this to the fans and have Guaraldi stay present, so to speak.
And what's great as well is you've got music, in many cases, you've never heard it because some of these tracks have never been released. And even if you've heard it on the shows, maybe Short Summer isn't on TV every year, like the Christmas show, like Charlie Brown Christmas or the other shows, but you instantly know what it is and can recognize it and know where it's going because it's such a part of our cultural heritage now that even if you've never heard it, you think you have. And I just think the most gratifying thing for me with Thanksgiving was coming back from a basketball game right when it had come out. And I had 4 12-year-old boys in the car who've never listened to jazz. They've never listened to a record because everything is, you know, hey, insert your digital device, yeah, play this track. Right. Yeah.
So they'll light up devices all across the world. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's literally, everything is immediate and you can call your attention to whatever. And this is an instrumental. There's one vocal on Thanksgiving. There's none on Short Summer, but it's instrumental. It's jazz. It's 50 to 55 years old. And I had an Wrapped audience that listened to the whole thing. We were on a 40-minute drive. They got through the entire album and they're like, that's cool. What's that? And I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And so that for me was like, okay, if these preteens can handle this for 40 minutes, then this is still completely current and new and exciting.
I saw a teenager on TikTok, which I never go to, with this record and proudly presenting it. I was like, oh my gosh, that's exciting that it is still hitting the nerve with a young generation.
It transcends all generations. It's for everybody. It is for everybody.
But we agree. Thank you. That's true. And again, it's just, it's pleasant. It's uplifting. And so, you know, part of this is, as we get into the fall here, there, you know, the country often goes through some difficult things, and we're obviously going through some difficult things right now.
Divisiveness, if you will.
And I think one of the great things about Peanuts is, and this Guaraldi music is, it brings everybody together.
That's right. It unifies everybody.
And it makes everybody sort of
universal.
You can pause and remember the thing. If you remember Peanuts from your childhood or the current new Peanuts stuff that's going on or whatever it is, it's very, it's unifying, but universal. it's also just, it makes you feel good. It's just pleasant. Mm-hmm. So it makes you feel good.
It's really uplifting music.
Yeah. This particular album, just from beginning to end, it's just, even when it's a short tracks, I've been listening to them a lot lately. Mm-hmm. It's seamless because it's hitting that same nerve. It's just bouncing along, swinging along.
And the best thing about the vinyl, because you can't really stop it and start it or choose the order you want, is we think that the way the show worked, which is, I guess this is obvious, but it wasn't obvious to me, it follows the order the way the show did. So it tells the story. So it has the same arc. So even the short cues go together because that's how it worked in telling the story in the special. So it tells that same, it tells a narrative just with the music as you're listening to it on the album. And I think hearing it on a vinyl album is probably the best way to get that because you can't trick it.
It's a 45. It's very specifically a 45. So I've noticed, again, becoming a vinyl enthusiast, it sounds that much more. You can hear all the bass and the details, the highs, the lows, everything comes up cleanly for the listener. And so from the audiophile perspective, this particular one, I think, is really going to be enjoyed.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it'll be good.
If somebody puts it on their turntable and it sounds slow, you got it on the wrong RPM.
That's right.
Hit the button.
Even if, but you know what? I've done that too. And it's still, it's not, it's a different feel. It's a different thing.
It's a new genre of music you create. None of that.
Yeah. All right, so this is great. Thank you guys so much. I'm going to put links. If there are links, I'll put links in the description of this episode so people can find it. And fellas, I hope you come back when there's more to talk about. This is always a blast to talk to you.
We love this. It might be very soon. If you'll have us back, we'd be happy to join you again. We love talking about this with you. And you've been so great interviewing us. And also, you know, even if you didn't like the music, I'd love talking to you. But the fact that you're such a big fan of it, too, is very gratifying for us because we're kind of in a bubble where we don't get to hear from people very often. And so and I'm not asking everybody to start writing us or calling us about this, but especially because I got many people that were upset that they didn't get the
green. But now I took that blue. Blue.
Now you blue. Don't have to give out your home phone number so that's people
right.
can.
Yeah. That's right. But we're excited about this. And Jason, this is Jason's favorite color, by the way, of the album.
Oh.
So that's also.
I do. And I think that, as I said, Record Store Day Indie exclusive will have that blue one
and
in record stores. And it is my favorite color. So, and on the next album, I'll have to say this is my second favorite color or my third favorite color.
And we have a standard black of vinyl as well, right?
Yes. And the CD and all the digital ways you can get it.
All the good stuff.
And again, it'll be July 5th. It's the 55th anniversary of the special. And, you know, I think it's the success the continued success of all the Grawley albums means there's no reason we can't do more of these. And as I said, we hope to be able to announce a new one coming out in the fall.
We'll see you in the fall. That's what we're hoping
to be. I think that'll be really exciting too. That's a great one too. So yeah. At some point there will be, we will run out and then we will have to talk about what else there is, because
they Grawley, do special editions. You do.
Well,
you
that, back sure just, I mean, there's also Vince Grawley also scored a bunch of our father's documentaries. And he also did a lot of other things that nobody has heard either. So I think part of what will be great is not only we celebrate all the work he did for Peanuts, but all of his other work we can celebrate in the future too. And I think that's, I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah.
So
we got some other gems lined up to accompany these things. So yeah, absolutely.
Great. So I'm very exciting times. Thank you guys again for being here. This is a real honor for me. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Heath. We appreciate your fandom. We appreciate how much you're into it, because that's what it's all about.
And teaching us about this too, because again, we're still novices to most of this, but now we've got one record store day under our belt. And so we've got that going.
Yeah.
And more to come. So it'll be great.